Yes, I'll say for the record, it is April 27th, 6:45, and we're about to start at 7 with a public hearing for the DDA Task Force on Increasing Residential in the Downtown.
My name is Susan Pollard, and I work with the Downtown Development Authority, and I'm very pleased to welcome you here today. We're very grateful that you made time to attend. This is the Downtown Residential Task Force's meeting to elicit your ideas and your feedback on some ideas that we've been talking about over the last many months. The charge of the task force was set last fall. I have an introduction for it, here's an introduction for you in the handout. But in essence, the dialogue about the greenbelt brought to a head a dialogue about land management and growth. How do we see ourselves growing? And how do we best accommodate the people that are going to be coming to our community? Last fall, the council approved the creation of this task force with the goal of trying to understand what are the obstacles to downtown residential development and what would be some possible solutions. The group was given a very ambitious start, 6 months. So I want them to understand these things and come back and report to us at the beginning of January. The group has been meeting since January on a pretty ambitious schedule, but every couple of weeks. As I go into this, I'd like to begin by naming the task force members, just so you have a feel for who they are, so maybe in the city beside you, if you feel comfortable, I'd ask the task force members to stand. We have Fred Beal over here, Jean Oliver, I think you're going to be over here, Bob Gillette, I don't think Bob's here yet, Doug Paul Moss, Doug Kimberly, over here, Steve Thorpe, Frank Segaro, and Wendy Wood. What's interesting about the task force is they bring together a lot of expertise, or a smaller number. We have, for instance, two downtown residents. We have two planning commissioners, two council members, and two developers. And as my guess and my description, a lot of them are aware of a couple of them. What their charge was is to come together to try to figure out what is happening downtown, and if anything, what we can do to make changes. I have in front of you, April, to the front of your packet, a questionnaire. The reason it's on the front is so that nobody misses it. The goal of tonight's meeting is for you to give us some feedback on some ideas. What the task force members are going to do as we get started are present some of the ideas that are being generated out of this task force setting. We need to get a sense from you if we're heading in the right direction. Again, our goal is to report back to council, and it's important that we understand what the issues are as seen by you. So if you see us at the meeting, please feel free to hand your fill out copy back to the task force members or Karen, Clark, and myself. Or if you are more comfortable, fill it out later and fax it, you can fax it over to me. As we get into this, just a sort of a broad overview, just to give you a sense of what we're doing. We began by first asking the question, what is downtown? It was one of those very early conversations that when we asked that question, I think it means something a little different to all of us. It means proximity to services and jobs and so forth. And depending on where you live in this community, downtown can be many different things. Because we have the DDA and DDA kind of district that's defined, we began with that as at least a piece of the problem. We also looked at the radiuses that surround the downtown, the 8th mile, the 4th mile, all of them were very much impacted by what was on downtown. Certainly all of these may be a little bit different than that, but it's a point to begin with. That's what we are looking at as a downtown. Some of what we did also in the first meeting was to try to get a feel for what's happening down there. Some of the things that we learned, for instance, is on the current zoning, we would develop available data box. It would be approximately 1 million square feet, and I said that pretty much. If we were to take the vacant lots outside the DDA district, and that's 8 miles, 1 mile, and we built up the vacant lots, we might only build up another 30 residences. There's not a whole lot of land that we're looking at. We look at things like there are 25 buildings in the downtown that are 5 stories tall. We found out things like there's 2,800 people living in the DDA district. The kind of statistics that we developed helped us understand a little bit about what we were working on. I've been handled to me to this point now, the task force members, Fred Deal is going to work us through, that some of our understanding of the areas are. Fred is then going to handle any of those work sub-off, he's going to walk us through what some of the possibilities are for the future. And if that's done, we're going to stop talking and open it up to feedback and questions or ideas that are really needed about this. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Fred.
Good evening. As Susan said, there was a lot of information generated during the course of the discussion so far. A couple of things that are important to note in terms of the issue of increasing the number of residents downtown. Between the 1990 and the 2000 census, for example, just 300 new residents in downtown. And about half of those are residents of a single apartment building, which actually stood vacant for 20 years before it was redeveloped, Courthouse Square. And for all the fanfare accompanying the development of loft-type residences in upper sections of buildings, very few units were constructed. And so what hinders the appropriate development reasonably priced downtown? And there are a variety of factors. We generally broke those factors into three areas: economic barriers, policy and culture barriers, and zoning barriers. And I should point out the point one of the barriers that generally speaking, to have a concept of what to work with in terms of a goal, we say preliminary, I guess we refer to it as a working goal until we have further discussion about this, but we set a goal of getting 1,000 new units in the near downtown area by 2010, a change of 1,000 from the 2000 census to the 2010 census, and 2,500 new units by 2030.
A total. A total of
2,500 total units, right, 1,500 more by 2030. And I should point out that on the way to the 2010 goal, we're about 250 units on the way, including things that happened at Ashley Roots, things that happened on Fifth Avenue, and some other projects that are already in place. But again, back to barriers. Economic barriers, policy and culture barriers, and zoning barriers. Economic barriers are things that basically make it more expensive either to do residential construction downtown or to do construction at all downtown. And as those relate to other settings where you might do construction. And so some of it's as simple as land costs are higher, construction costs are higher. Beyond that, though, there are a whole series of city-related development costs and fees. Some of which relate to what I refer to in the state of the community goal, things that are important to the community but do not relate to the specifics of the project. Affordable housing, for example, a specific cost or process that comes into play with certain projects can add as much as $40,000 per unit for the cost of each market group unit that's built in a project. Parks contribution adds a couple hundred bucks. The stormwater management cost at $4,000 to $5,000 per unit. The recent increase in sewer and water tap fees can add as much as $15,000 per unit to the cost of building a unit downtown. So when you start adding up, you're talking about cost. After you buy the land, before you start the building, it's as much as $75,000 a unit. It's pretty hard to imagine how you build a $200,000 unit, for example, with those kinds of costs imposed. Then we discuss, and for each of these categories, we discuss some general strategies, and then we started to formulate some things that we'd like to see put forward as possible recommendations. We're certainly not considering the recommendations until it's a response to you folks tonight, but we do have some ideas. And the strategy related to these issues is really to disconnect between both costs from the single project. For example, affordable housing. If affordable housing is a community goal, then the community should pay for it. And that could be done in a number of ways. It could be done on a citywide village. It could be done on a surcharge on every building permit, instead of just on those few projects where it happens to specifically apply. Those are a couple of ways to look at it. Eliminate the parks contributions in downtown residential projects. We already have three parks villages that put plenty of money in the system. Provide citywide funding for some of these other issues. I mentioned affordable housing, but sanitary sewer disconnect, the water and sewer fees are really associated with building more overall capacity of the system, perhaps those would be the cities over us. The suggestion that we had formulated was something like 0.5% of construction costs on every development instead of what really amounts to 20% of costs on the city developments. And kind of a third broader idea we thought about is we have the stormwater issue downtown. Let's think about some, like the DDA built, parking the DDA could build some large storm capture centers that might be allowed to be used by multiple projects. Those are just a few of the ideas that have come up so far. Policy culture barriers. And this is a little difficult to work through because I think a lot of this is perception that certain pillars is real. The city of Ann Arbor is perceived as being a difficult place to work. And that there are a variety of reasons for that. But regardless of the reasons, the way that it shows itself is that projects take a long time to get approved, they take a long time to get committed, they take a long time to get built. And that long process means additional costs, unpredictable outcomes, and discouragement for some from entering the system in the first place. And there are some other ways, you know, there are some things that other communities do, and our doesn't, that as a strategy we can start to address. And that strategy really relates to creating a true customer service culture at City Hall. And this is not, it's kind of a two-sided coin, because people in positions like building departments tend to view the world through regulatory eyes. They're there to serve what they view as their customer is the ultimate occupant of the building. And so they're looking at fire and safety and security and exits, and but in some cases they look at them so stringently that it limits what you can do. We might encourage a way to look at these things in a way that's more helpful. But the point is to get things built, and of course that's specifically what we were after last year, is this whole process of how can we accomplish more. It's create a way in which we turn some of that regulatory bias around and create a situation where they're there to help you, to help the process get done. Recommendations related, specific recommendations that we came up with, and again, we're looking for people's response to these, is first of all, of course, is to have the appropriate policy boards, which in this case would be City Council and Planning, respond to the recommendations of this body favorably. Basically, to approve resolutions accepting the target goals for units and accepting some of the strategies that we come up with. Then beyond that, we're really looking at some sort of measurements within the city regulatory processes that would help show how we're doing. For example, standardizing time for site plan and building permitting. Perhaps include a process in the staff in which some of the city reviews an application when it first comes in and sends you home that day, not 6 weeks later when they open the plan up and say, oops, it's missing something, and then they call us. Have the building department actually survey the customers and see how they're doing on an annual basis, a biannual basis. Are they getting better? Are they getting worse? And then produce an annual report that really reports on the economic benefits and, frankly, the economic detriment of development. In other words, if a lot of construction is taking place, what does that do for our tax rate? It certainly has a positive role on tax rate, but it doesn't have costs. You know, how does that advance those? Basically look at whether bringing in $5 million a year in taxes, which the kind of development we're proposing here would, is that going to be a positive thing in the second way, or are you going to spend $6 million again? And those are measurables that can be determined, and if they're determined on an annual basis, you can make a prediction about where you'd like to go. Zoning barriers, and we're going to shortly return this over to Calva, because a lot of the zoning issues have to do with what we like the city to look like, and he's going to go into that in a lot more detail. But I'd first point out, while on a statistical basis, there's a lot of room in our existing zoning system for more buildings, in a practical manner, that's really not true. Basically, to match out our existing zoning, we have to cut out buildings out. You have to build a lot of new buildings where existing buildings exist. You have to build office buildings because they're favored, not residential buildings. In some locations, in other case locations, you have to do other things. So, in effect, we don't really have enough capacity in our existing zoning ordinance to allow for what we're proposing to do here. So what we, there are a few specific restrictions that I've commented on. zoning designations like CTB and CTBI that provide for use of the zoning capacity only for commercial. Very restrictive FARs and no residential premiums in some areas like Southview. And I don't think I want to get into the technicality of all the details of the zoning ordinance and see, because that is very complicated. The zoning ordinance is, you know, 100 pages long, but the fact is that in general, for example, in the Southview area, you can only build a two-story building today. And in certain other areas, you can build more, but many areas are complicated by historic districts, for example. So there are a lot of areas. And then we have a lot of small zoning areas. A very cut-up zoning map makes it a little difficult to decide to engage in the family parcels. It makes it difficult to analyze what's really the best to go in the neighborhood, and flattening that out and broadening the zoning districts makes it safe. So our strategies to look at this relate to a number of changes to the zoning code. And the first thing would really be a very broad thing that's been talked about for a long time, but just not accomplished. And that's to have a zoning code that actually reflects the land use plan. We have a temporary plan, we have a DDA plan, we have a downtown plan, and they talk about land use in a certain way, and the zoning ordinance talks about land use in a different way. So one thing that we need to do is bring all those together. But beyond that, we would like to see that more sites could be built out in a logical way without the special circumstances required of what's called standard development, which again is a time factor. And then we've really gone through this in some detail and made a lot of specific recommendations related to zoning, but I'd like to point out, and this is the zoning map, so this is the existing building map behind us, what's built out in downtown. And we look at it, you can actually see there's, and I should point out that where, obviously this is the DDA, and so where the building stops, this is the DDA boundary, but even within the DDA boundary, there are certainly some building sites. But again, those building sites are restricted in a variety of ways, not at least of which is in many cases the public domain, and they're specifically designated for things like parking or other uses that make them difficult to use. So we suggested a couple of different approaches. And one of the ways that we're looking at this is taking sort of the core, what I would call the core of our downtown, an area probably bounded by Russell Huron, Williams State, and First, and creating kind of an overlay zone throughout that area that will allow some more flexibility than we currently have. And then beyond that, the principal changes, and they're reflected in the questionnaire, if they're not reflected otherwise in the written documents. But things like changing the CTB and CTBR areas to go off to the northwest and west to a more urban zone. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with what we have now, but we really have suburban zoning. We have deep setbacks, short buildings, an emphasis on commercial, allowances to things like, you know, dog kennels and driving car washes and stuff like that, but not. You know, so, and not to say that housing couldn't be put there, but that housing is favored there. So, that area we would see those to a more urban zoning, more like downtown. And one emphasis that I put on this is really to protect existing historic districts. And of course, again, from my earlier talk, I commented that the historic districts are, in a way, they're a barrier, but I think they're a value that we share as a community, and they're worth protecting. But if we can't build in those historic districts, then we need some flexibility to build elsewhere. I think beyond that, though, I would like, I only make two more comments, I guess. The other thing we would go with this is that we would create some flexibility in our zoning capacity and density and height, is that we recommended that some basic urban design guidelines be implemented. And we have not centered on exactly what those would be, but they would be the kinds of things that keep the downtown density friendly. It might be common e-pipes. For example, we mostly have a two-story downtown. So perhaps taller buildings would have a setback of three stories. But at least they certainly have a distinction of three stories, so that they felt a little bit more like the existing building, even if they extended it above that. And you'll see that we do have some buildings in downtown, the Key Bank building is one, that have a two-story cabinet. You know, if you completely heard the building, it has a two-story base, it has about a six-story middle, and it has a top on it, makes it a nice feel for the downtown, and we want to encourage that kind of thing. Other things would be specific distances between tall buildings, so it can't just loom over you all the way down the street. Setback is great on certain corners. Well, we have this, for example, right now, the north side of Huron Street, most of the buildings are set back a little bit. We wouldn't want the next building to be built on the sidewalk in that location, even though many other locations would not prefer the next building to be built on the sidewalk. Building entrances facing the street. Real basic concept, but there are a lot of buildings in downtown that are, unfortunately, most of them are institutional buildings, city county buildings, that have one entrance on the entire block. It's really just unacceptable for the pedestrian, urban, steel type of situation. We'd like to see more entrances on Main Street, and certainly at least one entrance on Main Street. And then, having building plans finished, so that you can see in the building, see what's going on. If the building has a blank shear wall on the street, it feels particularly unfriendly. If you can see in, see what's going on, that helps. So those are the kinds of ideas that we have about urban design now. Doug, why do you take away
Good evening. My name is Doug Kelbaugh. I'm a downtown resident and was happy to serve on this committee. I'm going to walk you through some images that will give you some idea of the mashing, the character, the form of what a build-out that included a lot more residential units might look like in the downtown. To repeat, we're talking about the DDA area, the Downtown Development Authority area, as the downtown. And our goal is to provide over the next 20 or 30 year period, 4 years of which have already elapsed, between 2000 and 2030, about 2,500 units. That's about 5,000 people in a city of about 114,000 people, just to put it in perspective. But downtown units tend to have smaller households because they tend to have less children. So if it's two people per household, it's roughly 5,000 people. 2,500 units over 30 years. So it's around 85 or 90 units a year of construction in the downtown. We actually looked a little outside the DDA, and about 500 of those 2,500 units we figured could be built actually on North Main. They're not on the images that we're going to show you tonight. They're just too far afield. But we feel that it's quite possible to build units along North Main. The view to the river is already blocked by low-rise buildings. There's no reason above those low-rise buildings there couldn't be four, five, six stories of residential, which are, in fact, enjoy the amenity of river views. So we're talking about roughly 2,000 units in the DDA over 30 years. We've already built 160, or we have that many built or in the pipeline, in the first 4 years of this 30-year period. 2,500 units might be the equivalent, depending on many variables, but it might be the equivalent of about 2,500 acres of greenfield development if you take roads, lots, and the sort of development we see happening on the periphery of Ann Arbor. So that's certainly one of the goals, is to decrease sprawl by concentrating more people downtown. It's also an attempt to decrease traffic, because as you know, people who live downtown are able to take not all of their trips, but a proportion of their trips on foot. So I'm going to turn the lights way down, because the image isn't very big. If we go back to the starting point. And we're going to turn all the lights but the very side lights off. Okay, let me try to orient you on this map. I'm sorry it can't be bigger, but that's the biggest screen we have. I'll start with the tallest building, Tower Plaza. This is a 26-story building. Here's Hill Auditorium. The campus is over here. There's a little bit of the medical complex at the old high school. That's the Campus Inn. That's Sloan Plaza. That's One North Main. That's the Senior Citizen Project. I forget the name right now. What's it called?
Courthouse
Square. There's City Hall. There's a big parking garage on 4th and William. Here's Main Street, which is relatively low scale. There's the new Ashley News. Here's Liberty Street. One of the key connectors between the retail on State and the retail on Main. There's Liberty. Here's Huron, the state highway, wider, and therefore, we thought, able to tolerate and accommodate taller buildings. There's already somewhat of a tradition between Sloan Plaza and Campus Inn and One North Main to have taller buildings there. We came up with three different ideas for having higher density, three different ways to deal with height. On Huron, we felt the buildings could be taller. We felt they could be 9, 12, and as high as 15 stories because of the width of the street and the speed of the traffic and so on. In a minute, I'll show you the buildings on Huron. They are blue in color. We also thought Liberty could tolerate some taller buildings being the main connector, the main east-west connector. We thought buildings could be three stories in height, basically along the street with a zero setback that is right on the sidewalk up to three stories. The common eve height, roughly common, it'll never be absolutely common. And then a setback with the ability to go another five stories behind that. So there's at least an attempt to make the perceptual experience of walking down the street a low-rise experience by stepping back the housing and then not letting the housing be too no higher than another five stories, but also not too wide or too long. Those will be in red. We also felt that Ashley and First, if you look at this map, you can see Ashley and First down here are relatively undeveloped. There's a lot of vacant land, a lot of underdeveloped, underutilized land. We thought they could also have three-story buildings, which we call a plinth or a platform or a base. And on Ashley and First, we thought you could add one or up to three stories above that for a total of a four or six-story building. And then lastly, we thought on major vacant lots, we could also do, in parking lots, a three-story base or plinth above which could be a a total of 9, 12, or 15 feet in height. So 6, 9, and 12 foot tower, but the tower would have a floor plate limited to 90 feet by 90 feet, which is a good floor plate for residential. As you know, residential towers are generally more slender than office towers, because you need to be closer to the daylight. Office buildings can have much bigger floor plates. So the tower, although tall, up to 12 stories total, or up to 15, they're relatively small, and we said that if they're 9 stories apart, they have to have 50 feet between them. If they're 12 stories, they have to have 75 feet between them, and if they're 15 stories, they have to have 100 feet between them. So based on all of that, this is what, over a 30-year period, roughly the next 26 years, might happen to the form of downtown Ann Arbor. Here are the blue street, the so-called blue buildings along Huron, 9, 12, and 15. Now this is going to oscillate between existing and proposed, although you have to realize this is just a draft idea we're floating. It's not really officially proposed. This is what we're considering. The yellow buildings are the 90 by 90 foot points that are randomly placed here at 9, 12, and 15 stories. The blue are also random, and the red, which we'll come back in a minute, are basically 4, 6, and 8 stories, and they tend to be, the red, as you'll see, tend to be along Liberty and Ashley and First, and some down on South Main. Way out North Main, we're talking about towards the interchange, is where there would be another row of red buildings with views of the river. So what else can I tell you about this? It's It's an attempt not to have blanket zoning, but to take advantage of vacant lots and parking lots, which the yellow do, take advantage of the Huron corridor, which has a different feel and character, and also to reinforce the Liberty connection, and to take greater advantage of some of the vacant land on Ashland First. So what you're looking at is about 2,000 units, which is 80 or 90 units a year. That would mean roughly one of the yellow buildings, or one of the red, or one of the blue buildings would be built every year, on average. And then probably one of the smaller red ones. That would, over a period of 30 years, result in the shape and the form of the skyline that you've just seen. So why don't we go, to take the color out of it, which may be confusing you, this is what it would look like at full build-out. The dark gray, by the way, are the historic district buildings. They're pretty much left, they are left intact. Now, I warn you and plead with you not to look at this too literally. This is a random, illustrative plan. It's not definitive. You can't look at site A and say, that's my site. Why isn't there a building here? Or why is there such a tall building? Or why? It's not that definitive. In fact, what we did, we figured out how to put about 10 million square feet rather than 5, and then we randomly looked at possibilities. Sandy, who's Sandra Arlinghouse, has been doing incredible service. They sort of randomly applied the algorithm or the rules that we came up with. So you can't take this literally. You'll see some buildings are built around existing buildings, because indeed some buildings might be torn down and replaced. But the yellow buildings are all on vacant lots, and many of the red ones and some of the blue ones are as well. All right, now we're going to show you some viewpoints. These are perspective as opposed to aerials, which might give you a little better feeling for the character. Before we do that, though, I want to say also in defense of the drawings, they're based on maps that aren't absolutely up to date. So, for instance, you don't see the new housing on the older site, what's it called, Loft. They're not on the map yet. And there are a few others that are missing. Okay, now these, I hope these are helpful. You know, I think we should turn all the lights off, if you don't mind. So it's a little easier to get into this space that we're about to reveal. Right now, we're hovering over South Main, down towards the stadium. Let's say down, well, the south of Hill. And what you see is the skyline with the red, yellow, and blue buildings. There's the tall 26-story Tower Plaza, as you can see right there. And these are the 6, 8, 10, 12, and 15-story buildings in gray. And in a minute, you'll see them in color, which would identify Huron versus Liberty versus Ashley and First. Here we go again on that cycle. So that's where it would appear sort of driving in from the stadium on South Main. There's a little development even on South Main down around Hill. Next. Now we're actually staying on Main Street, but we've moved up to, we're over, where are we over here? Well, we're not quite to William. We're hovering a little back from William. There's William. There's the intersection. There's the parking garage. I'm sorry. This is Main Street. There's the parking garage on 4th and Division. And that's the big vacant lot behind the Renaissance and so on, the restaurant row here. So here we see three of those 90 by 90-foot towers at random heights on a plinth. Here we see some buildings along Huron. Here's one. One of these red ones is on Liberty, and these are back on 1st and Ashland. So we've maintained the low pedestrian quality of Main Street, which is 2 and 3 and even 1-story high. We actually feel these buildings could be a little higher. They could be 2 or 3 stories or even 4, but we don't feel tall buildings belong in this historic district. There is, of course, 1 or 2 already. There's a bookend at either end. There's one North Main, and there's the new Ashland News building. And there's the one bank building along the way. So these buildings are really wouldn't be so visible if you were walking down the sidewalk. Their height would be eclipsed by the cornice lines of these buildings that actually front on the main street. Now we're going to move a few blocks north to Main and Liberty.
Washington.
Main and Washington. We're not quite there. You can see there's the intersection. And here it's going to cycle through again. Existing. This is the bank building. And that would be one North Main there. There's a building next to that. That'd be the Greyhound site. Again, don't take it literally, but it's just a random illustration. That's on that big vacant parking lot. This is one North Main, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and here's, you can see in the distance these 5 or 6 story buildings out on the river on North Main. Maybe 500 units out there. Along about a quarter mile stretch, a 3/8 of a mile stretch. So here's existing, and this is what it might shape out to be. I mean, these buildings might be built elsewhere. But what we're showing is enough mass to not only accommodate 2,000 units downtown, but also the plinths, the bases that you see, would be filled with stores on the ground floor and offices on the second and third floor. So the residential units tend to be above the third floor in this model. And indeed, there's also square footage for off-street parking. So the 5 million square feet generously translates into 2,000 or 2,500 dwelling units, generously. There's quite a bit of other build-out. I mean, you could build that number of units with less total mass, less volume, but we don't think it'd be realistic because obviously you want be new shops and offices as well as new parking. Now we're going to move to, we're looking east on Huron. This is the old tech center. This is the site of the new YMCA, which is under construction now. This is the railroad bridge here. So we're looking east. There's Tower Plaza. And here we see some buildings along First and Ashley. These yellow towers are on the, I forget the name of that block. The
brown block.
The brown block. The tallest new building is 15 stories in this model, and I'd say the average is maybe 8 or 10. Existing in the year 2030. So that's it for the movie tonight. That's it for the cartoons. Sorry, we don't have popcorn or candy. Pardon? Okay, you mean the fly through?
Yeah.
Do you want to see a fly through? Candy, first of all, let's give Candy a big round of applause. Candy has done all of this on a pro bono basis. Endless hours, hundreds of hours. She has prepared a few fly throughs. Guaranteed to make you busy, if not nauseous. would you like to see a few? Okay. Put on your seatbelt.
It's coming in. Take some out the word.
And we're moving north on Main Street. Now we just turn left, and we're looking west on Huron, up towards Dexter. Now we just turned around, did an about face, we're looking east on Huron.
Now we've backed up. There's the new Y, or the site for the new Y in the foreground. I don't know where that is.
Chiron looking west.
And Chiron looking west?
Just west of State.
Just west of State?
Yeah.
So the old high school, the Freeze building is right to the left. That's a church. That's another church.
Yes.
That's Washington.
No,
that's Campus N. By the way, the blue buildings west of Division are built out of the sidewalk with, again, a three-story eave height and then a setback. But east of Division, in keeping with the feeling of Sloan Plaza and the Campus Inn, the whole building is set back 20 feet and rises directly from the ground to the top as a sheer wall of 9, 12, or 15 stories. So we did try to differentiate between the character of Huron east and west of Division, where we think it makes a change. So if you'd like Sandy to stop it, are there any audience requests? Do you live there by any chance? Don't worry. No, actually, let's see. That would be the Campus Inn. No, that's the
Campus Inn.
That's Sloan Plaza right there.
Underneath.
It's underneath it. It got a little bit bigger in this model. Not that that would happen, but just that's the way the computer did it. There could be, you know, again, I want to repeat, these are random and not definitive. I can't remember if there's one.
What do you want?
Not necessarily. I think there's probably space for one there.
No, it looks like there is one on that site, Harris Hall. It looks like there's a blue building over what's now Harris Hall.
We didn't build anything on existing church sites or historic sites.
Yes.
We made a mistake or two, but we were trying not to.
Is it possible to see where the midsection
is near that side? When you're coming, you're down? Well, we did look at it from Huron, but you want to look at it from Flight Liberty coming in?
What I'm saying is that because when you're walking on that car,
yeah, if we get the Liberty and go low. Can you move it along? Okay, well, here we go.
Yes,
we can. It seems to look taller than you. We warn you. All right, we're getting there. There we go. And then we just drop down from there.
Yep.
This is sort of a little bit, whoops. All right, there we go, we're getting lower. So, those three buildings there are in the lot behind Main. What's that like? That's my lot. I believe that's a 9, a 12, and a 15. And that's on Liberty, that's down here on. This is Liberty right here.
There, there.
That's Eaton. And that's Liberty Plaza,
yeah,
which will always be 11 stories taller than anything else. Tower Plaza. Any other audience requests? Popular man, whatever. All right, well, I think We're now ready to turn the lights on and talk. Questions and answers, comments?
Okay, this is a check. What can it be done? Questionnaire? Is it off?
That was the area that Fred described, basically Huron, between Ashley and the state, Huron and Williams. That's sort of the inner core of the DDA. What most people think of as the heart of downtown. Everywhere else?
Yes.
Probably, you know, actually everywhere.
Yes. In fact, outside of that overlay area, the tallest zoning district that's specifically proposed is the same as the tallest zoning district we have today.
And that includes both sides of Huron, for instance.
Right. It's one half block north of Huron, essentially the fair, one half block west of First, and one half block south of Lillian.
That's what here is, but you are showing the yellow building outside of that zone.
No, you're splitting hairs.
This is a work in progress.
Pardon? The yellow
buildings
are not.
Yeah, the yellow buildings are not part of the so-called overlay zone. There are sort of opportunities.
Yeah, we actually, there's actually sort of two different ideas represented here that what Doug has shown you relates to an idea that really was focused on placing specific types of building on specific sites. And then separately from that, there was some direction that was actually aimed at trying to codify how this could work and maybe create some additional opportunity that created this overlay district or what I call an opportunity zone. And they might result in slightly different configurations, but that's part of why we're looking for feedback. You know, is realistically, if the initial goal of up to 2,500 units is acceptable, but for example, 15-story buildings is not, then obviously to get to that goal, we have to have a different configuration of buildings. So we're looking for feedback on all those different points.
Urbanization guidelines?
Yes.
And you said reiterated them when you talked about your powers.
If there are questions about the meeting, please ask. Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for coming here. Exactly what they hope to have is people come out and talk about these concepts and share some of the work that the task force has been doing. They've been working very hard, and I congratulate all of you And it's for all the hard work we've been doing and working for this. So thank you very much. Thank you for coming.